Hello, welcome
Love
to
Talk Radio.
Wow, where's that come from? Hello, welcome to Poet Runner, and today we have my co-host Richard Modiano, and today's guest will be Terry Wolverton. We'll be talking about two books that she has.
Well, Terry, I think it would be accurate to describe you as a woman of letters because your work covers poetry, creative nonfiction, memoir, novels, short stories, and that's basically hitting on everything that every genre of literature is covered there. And one of the things that ties it all together for me is that the work is physical, and by physical I mean it's grounded in the body. And I know that on a personal note, I first heard of you as a performing artist. I was living in New York City at the time, and there was a magazine that had you on the cover. It was a black and white photograph. I forget the title of the magazine. It might have been a feminist magazine. But I picked it up, and I was looking through it, and I read this article about you. And this was probably in the mid-80s. So I delved into your work after reading that article, and I was very impressed about how you hit on so many different subjects. But at the same time, there was a physicality to all of your work. Because I know that you're also you're a Kundalini yoga instructor. You practice meditation, and that came later. But your work as a performing artist tells us that emotions occur in the body. They occur physically, and there's this tremendous physicality to your work. And that is something that I think often gets lost. And other poets somehow go straight for some sort of abstraction that is sort of entirely an idea rather than being grounded in an actual physical real world. Can you talk about that a little bit? Am I on the right track here, or is this off the wall?
No, it's very kind of you to say, and thank you for being aware of the various different kinds of things that I've done. When I teach writing, I will often tell emerging writers that everything we know first through the senses, and
exactly.
Then our brain processes the meaning of those sensory experiences. And if we can bring the reader to the sensory experience, then they'll be involved in it. They'll be processing themselves. If you just give them the information already processed, they may or may not engage with it directly. So that's always very important to me, to have that experiential element in my work.
And there is one poem in your collection, Blue Hunger, that particularly struck me, that sort of embodies all this and has tremendous resonance. I mean, it's really wonderfully constructed, and that's the poem Hissy Fit, which begins with a kind of pun. That title is a sort of pun for our listeners. So I wonder if you have that one at hand, I wonder if you could read that one for us.
I do. Hissy fit. Numbers are everyday milestones. A finger in chalk. The wreckage of consciousness. Everything born will die. Is this not the vision we recreate? Blackboard in shards. Formulas shattered into years. Hysteria. Just another potential sign, an abstract theory of female tendencies, mathematical frame for defining a womb emotional, my natural organs shocking and wrong. That's the message they intend me to find at the drive-through lobotomy hut where I've washed myself clean of those inborn limitations and scattered my once perfect cloth in the dead dust.
Yeah, there is so much history behind this poem, or embodied in this poem. For our listeners, the notion of hysteria was a sort of a late 19th century pseudoscientific diagnosis of women reacting to oppression, basically. And they had to have a way of managing it. So they invented a whole complete pseudoscientific theory that it had to do with a malfunction of the womb. The hysteria was derived from that notion. And in the poem that Terry just read, we have this whole history in there. We have the intent of the people who formulated that concept. And by the way, that was the late 19th century, early 20th century was the period when pseudoscience was used as an explanation for all kinds of ways of oppressing the voiceless, basically. It happened along racial lines. It happened along gender lines. And it was basically another way of justifying domination. And to give it, because science had tremendous prestige at that time, we will give a scientific background to our prejudices in order to legitimize them. And this poem really cuts right through that. So, and can you talk a little bit about that idea also in your performance art?
Well, you know, it's not only to pathologize groups of people, but it's particularly to pathologize their resistance and thereby dismantle their resistance. An earlier book of mine is a novel and poems called Embers, and it's about the life of one of my grandmothers who, in response to being failed by every possible system, the family, marriage, the church, the medical establishment, she burns her house down as an act of resistance. And, of course, she's then incarcerated in a mental institution and given electroshock treatment. And rather than seeing that she was furious at the injustice that had been done to her, it serves the system to pathologize it and punish her for it. And we see it all over the place.
Yeah, well, to add a personal note, my mother suffered a miscarriage, and she was very depressed after that. And the doctors of the time, this was the early 1960s, said, well, she needs shock treatments. And I do remember she was in a mental hospital for a while, and they were giving her shock treatments. And I know that I was, like, traumatized by her responses after these. And, of course, my father was very uneasy, but he was doing what the experts told him he should do. And it was like, you know, this really, this impacted me. And I think it was this sort of thing, and what happened to my mother sort of predisposed me to question the whole rationale behind these kind of things. And, you know, she saved the rubber bit that they put in her mouth, which I have now still, to remind myself of that. And, of course, it did nothing for her.
Did she recover herself at any point? No, I'm just curious about her outcome.
Well, you know, the depression lifted, whether it was due to the shock treatments or not, but the depression did lift, And it left her with some gaps in her memory. She couldn't remember certain things for a while. And apparently that is a regular side effect of shock treatment. But,
sure.
You know, that was something that she would never wish on anyone, she told me.
I imagine that's true.
So, you know, that was... And, you know, that is, I think, why I really like this poem, Hissy Fit, because it's, for me and for anybody reading this poem, you will take away different things. I mean, there is something, you bring your own experiences to a poem, and it resonates. You don't have to have the exact same experiences that the poet had. You don't have to have my experiences in my own case, but I think any reader coming to this will learn from it and will appreciate what the intent of this poem is. And it's really, for me, it's really a wonderful poem.
Thank you. I so appreciate that.
And also, another thing that strikes me about your poetry is its versatility. And there is another poem in Blue Hunger called Twisted Twister Twist. And this is really... this is like a terrific poem that has my cat is walking in front of everything now. The music in it, the use of language, the way it's constructed is really great, I thought. I mean, I really like this. It's free associative in a way. I think that, well, read it for us if you will. It'll be better than me trying to explain it.
Okay, I will just say that this poem was inspired by a work of, or a series of photographs by the artist Susan Silton of tornadoes. So, Twisted Twister Twist. Tempest wheel in sight, sepulchral trees electrocute daylight, thwart with impalpable sabotage, threaten escapist reticence, temptress waves, indolent souls try to wallow in sacred trysts, epitaphs raw, tense tersely written, ingratitude seize, triumphant testicles wither, ink spills tantalize every demon. Thunder waits impassively, such tearful elation. Remember, thoughts withheld invoke strange testimony. Even Darwin trembled when intimate silence tangled. Ever resourceful, twilight waltzes in sonorous time. Evening devolves toward wretched intoxication. Suppose touch. Triage wanton insurrection. Suppress truth. Elegant death transforms wicked indifference. Seizes tomorrow's emergent reverence. Temporary windows inhale sedative tropes. Elide reflection. Torture whispers insistent song, hypnotize trance life while it savors tea. Elliptical dharma, twisted, wistful, ictus, strictest, stricter.
That's great. And this was inspired by a series of photographs.
Yes.
And I think, you know, right in that very first line, you set the entire scene for this. I mean, it's like we can see that storm. We can feel that storm. And that's something that I really like about this poem. And,
Thank you.
This is something that really is, well, as I said earlier, it's all physical and it's all really happening in a way. It's like we are there. And I think that's one of the great things that I like about your poetry, because, you know, you bring us right to the spot, right to what is happening. And I know that there are some poets that like to put a distance between the poet and the reader, and there are other poets that draw us in. Now, that's fine for poets who like to do that. They have an idea that they want to share, and they don't want us to become emotionally involved. Well, that's fine. That's okay. I mean, everyone has their own particular taste in poetry, but this is the kind of poetry that I personally like best because I like being drawn into this, and I like having the emotions of another person shared with me in a way that I can relate to, and I think that is really that's really the accomplishment of a poet who has a mastery of language, and I think you show that in your poetry and in your prose and the novel and poems, which is really a brilliant way of conveying a narrative. It's really something. I mean, I did look at that one as I looked at that as well, just to get a taste of all of your work. And again, I come back to the versatility of it. And at the same time, there is movement in your work as a poet. There are taking up new subjects, different approaches. There is constant interest in the development of your work, and I think that's a reason. By the way, listeners, what I'm trying to get at here, and I'll try and cut to the chase on this. The reason that at any rate that I follow the work of a particular poet is to witness these changes, and to witness this probing and use of language in new ways that are unanticipated. I mean, you can't with some poets you can know what they're going to say next. With poets like Terry, you don't know. It's a surprise about how she's going to approach something, and I think that is something that really draws me in as a reader.
Well, thank you. I have the, I don't know if it's a good habit or a bad habit, but I never like to repeat myself. I've been told it's very bad for marketing with my work, but I'm always interested in trying something new. I'm always interested in experimenting and going someplace that I haven't gone before. And, you know, it means that I always have a pretty steep learning curve. I teach myself to do things that I don't know how to do. But that's just what draws me in my work. So, you know, the book Embers was just all narrative, and I worked for maybe about 6 years on that book, and after that I stopped being interested in writing narrative for a long time, and I was interested in more experimental uses of language, which you can see as the work goes on. This poem that you just had me read, Twisted Twister Twist, you'll see if you're looking at it that those three words are spelled out in the words of the poem. So the first letter of each word, tempest, wheel, incite, sepulchral trees, electrocute, daylight, the first letters of that spell out twisted, and then so on, twister, twist, throughout the poem.
Yeah.
And that was just kind of a, you wouldn't hear that probably if you're just listening to the poem, but you can see it on the page, and it just added another layer of interest for me.
Well, yeah, I think it works beautifully. I mean, it's, and listeners, this is why you return to a good poem, because you can always find out something new in it. It's never closed off. There is always something else to see in that poem, and of course, there is also, well, we are moving in space and time all the time. So, you know, a poem that you read 2 years ago and you reread it, you see something new in it because you personally have had new experiences. You've grown in certain ways, things have happened, and you come back to a good poem, and your appreciation deepens. And I think this is really one of the beauties of poetry, good poetry, And you know, any artist that is a master of her art has an open-ended relationship with it. It's not closed off. It's not finished. It is continuing, and it's growing with the artist. And what I wanted to ask you, are there things that you've written in the past that you go back and look at again and surprise yourself with them?
Sure. It's not uncommon to have the experience of thinking, who wrote that?
Yeah.
What is that voice? That is especially true of work that has not been in print. I'll look it over and I'll think, when did I write this, and what was I thinking, and where, you know, what is coming through in that piece? Work that it has been in print, I tend to be more familiar with because I, you know, read it aloud and know it. But it's interesting to see that even returning to certain poems, I'm still stirred by the same emotions that gave rise to them.
And that's what makes a poem live, because when you do go back to it, even if you were the creator of this poem, it's sort of once it's left your imagination and it's out there for everybody else to see, it has a life of its own if it's a good piece. And like you just said, you know, did I write that? Who wrote that? And that's something else that I like about your work. It's fresh all the time. It's fresh all the time. It's new all the time. And really, that is the kind of poetry that, you know, why would you buy a poetry book when you read it once, you put it away? Well, you know, if the work is good, you buy the poetry book so you can return to it again and again and get new stuff, get new things from it. It's always giving you something. And that is something that is really good about your work.
I'm humbled by your words. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, I read a lot of poetry, and you know, to be quite honest, you can read some poem. It's a good poem, and you know, you can take it all in one reading, and there's no need to go back to it. But with the best poetry, it grows on you, as they say. It sinks roots into your mind, into your imagination, and you want to come back to it and read it again. So, you know, I compliment you on this ability. I mean, it's something that poets should aspire to. I mean, there's a sort of Buddhist hermeneutic which talks about the inner, outer, and secret meaning of certain sutras. And you can find that, you can see that in a poem. There's an outer meaning, there's a surface meaning that you can read and enjoy, but there is there's an under meaning to that. There's a deeper understanding there that you get from a second reading. And but then there is that secret meaning. That secret meaning it's not so easy to grasp, but it's there. And if you come back to it, you come back to that poem again and again, it may reveal itself to you. And that's the excitement about reading good poetry, is this ability that the best poets have to put that into their work. So,
well, and it's also something that's being revealed in the reader,
that comes
from within them. That the poem strikes the chord of.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I forget who said this, but years ago, when I lived in New York City, I worked at the Art Students League and of New York, and one of the teachers there, a painter, was talking to his class, and my compañera back then, she was taking that class, and so I was there listening in, and he said, some guy was saying, well, you know, I looked at that painting that you told us to look at, you know, like it's just, I didn't really get anything from it. And so he answered is, well, you only get the pleasure of which you are capable. So my friend, expand your sensibility and then you'll get it.
Great.
So anybody, and then what was, I forget who was it, Whitman that said, in order to have great poetry, you have to have great readers or a great audience, and that's also true too. So you know, poetry is not like mass market literature. You know, you can't. It's not like the equivalent of a Big Mac and a large fries. It's it takes some.
Although I've read those poems.
Yeah, it takes some commitment on the part of the reader to appreciate good poetry. And to me,
sure,
it's really worth the effort. So listeners, if you were looking for something that doesn't challenge you, that goes down like a Big Mac and a large fries, look elsewhere. But for those people, I mean, but you can get something on the surface of it even so, even if you don't want to go any deeper. But really, to really get the depth of any kind of a good work, you have to open yourself to it. You have to do a little work on your side in order to grasp what the poet is trying to tell you, in order to get the full impact of the emotion that is being evoked. So, I mean, it's worth the effort. It's worth the effort. And I'm going to let you pick something that you would like to share with us.
Okay. I'm going to go to my collection, Ruin Porn, and the poem I'm going to read is titled Earthbound, and there are three parts to it, so they're not long. One, my hunger chews at the machine of the world. It's either gasoline or food, and the automobile is so shiny. All the seasons falling now. We cakewalk around the fouled waters. Seeds buried in some backyard will see the fires before they see the weary sun. Two. Who keeps the artifacts of that distant time? Who owns the toucan or carnival lights? If the blind dog forgets them, do they disappear? Pictures bleached to chemical sky, they mock our reddened eyes, control the story of a once green past. They own the story of after. Three, but I'm a flippant sinner, just a whisper of calliope for a soul. My sunburned shoulders wrapped in breeze, a bird of fun and frenzy, unable to listen or belong. My private song begs for transcendence, but the promise of a lost world is to starve the stars.
Oh, that's a wonderful ending on that. This is, both of these books are published by Finishing Line Press, Ruin Porn and Blue Hunger. And Terry told me before we started the show that the poems in Ruin Porn are the most recent ones, but in the world of publishing, somehow that was the one that got published first. And Blue Hunger, which came out after that, are older poems, but they're both worth getting, listeners. And you can get them. I advise people to support small presses by ordering directly from the publisher. So go to the publisher's webpage, and that's where you can buy these books. Otherwise, look for them in your independent bookstore, and as only as a last resort, go to Amazon. But do support small presses. They deserve it, because it's in small presses that you will find risky poetry. These are the people that are willing to take risks and to gamble on work that is really good, I think. Anyway, we're out of time. Terry, I want to thank you for giving us your time. And listeners, please do seek out these books. Terry Wolverton has her own website. Check out her website for all of the work that she's done. And again, thanks for listening, and thanks again, Terry.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Raphael.
Thank you for listening. This has been another episode of Poet Runner, and tomorrow we will have Mindy Smith. Thank you for being part of the show.